Ready for a career change? If broadcasting is one of your choices, the Alaska Broadcasters Association is ready to help you take a closer look. Sales support, computers, underwriting, and news are just a few of the many job options that broadcasting has to offer qualified individuals. If you are the type of person who likes to learn and grow, then broadcasting could be the path for you. For employment resources and more information, visit the Alaska Broadcasters Association online at alaskabroadcasters.org.
Good morning. It's 16 minutes after 8 a.m. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, and it's time for our live local interview. I have three guests in the studio with me today, Molly Johnson and Andrew Tomes with the Sitka Conservation Society, and Jasmine Shaw. She's with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for coming in today. You're here to talk about something that's pretty exciting for me. I grew up in the Midwest. We're going to be talking about 4-H, but I think that 4-H is a little different in Alaska than it is in other places. So I'm going to start with Molly. If you could tell us a little bit about what you have, some special programs you have going on this summer for 4-H.
Yeah, so right now we're in our summer camp mode of 4-H. So we've been working on camps for the past couple of weeks, and we already had a summer harvest camp where we picked salmon berries and then and other things. And then our previous week, we just did a canning camp, so we kind of learned to process all of that and learn how to preserve food. And then upcoming in the next couple of weeks, we have other great camps like our kayaking camp, and this week is our survival camp where we're partnering with AMSI. So we have a lot of really cool things happening.
So you have, well, I'm looking here, I see, oh gosh, nine camps that you've had, that you'll have throughout the summer. And the age ranges for these are, can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so we've had, we've offered camps that age range from age 5 to 18. So mm-hmm. we had a high school camp previously last month, and we have a middle school camp still available. It's an Italian cooking camp for middle schoolers, and then our other camps are available for like elementary school age kids, which is the Sitka National Historical Park camp that we're partnering with them, and a citizen scientist camp. Those are still also open to our elementary school agers.
Wow, that's a lot going on. I have to say that Italian cooking is not something that comes to mind when I think of 4-H.
Yeah, we have a lot of middle schoolers who like to cook, so we decided to offer something that would be of interest to them. So.
Really? And how's the interest been so far?
It's going well. We still have a lot of space left, though, but okay. Yeah.
Wow, that's really fun. So other things that we have going on, 4-H, of course, doesn't have just programs during the summer, but there are programs throughout the year. I'm going to ask Andrew, can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on with 4-H throughout the year and the relationship between 4-H and the Sitka Conservation Society?
Yeah, so the Sitka Conservation Society organized to get a 4-H program going in Sitka about 5 years ago now, I think, and it started out with the Alaska Way of Life 4-H is what we got into it thinking about doing, and it was using all of the 4-H values of learning by doing and hands-on learning and civic values, and combine that with, you know, honestly, inspiration that we've learned from Tlingit Alaskans in Southeast Alaska of passing down skills and traditions from elders to youth to learn how do you live with the environment around us and how do you build community. So all of our programs, you know, really aim to hit those focus areas. And, you know, even the Italian cooking, you know, it might seem way different from 4-H and way different from, you know, Alaska way of life, but we'll be using Alaska grown and harvested and gathered ingredients into the cooking, and teach the youth about nutrition and sharing skills with others and learning from others and, you know, sharing what they cook with elders and people in the community.
That sounds great. This, I'm learning so much, and I hope listeners are too, about what's going on with 4-H. So Jasmine, turn to you a little bit. So you're not involved directly with Conservation Society, is that correct? But rather with the Cooperative Extension?
Correct.
Okay. And what's your role with 4-H?
So I kind of oversee the 4-H program here, and there are about a dozen adult volunteers and mentors that are involved with different 4-H projects, and I get to help mentor them as well and support them as they lead all these different groups. So we've got, in addition to the summer camps, we have a regular meeting geocaching group, hiking group, photography, food and nutrition, as it was mentioned, shooting sports, and more. So
that's a really comprehensive program. You've got another event that's coming up as well that I don't think we talked about yet. You'll have a fair, a bit of a 4-H fair.
That is correct. Traditionally, 4-H is associated with annual fair of some sort, and so we wanted to give the kids here a chance to showcase all the different projects they've been working on throughout the year. And so we've partnered with the Farmers Market on July 30th as a space where we can do that. So we'll have prizes as well for kids to come in and bring. The gardening group will bring in some produce that they've been growing. The cooking and nutrition will have some baked goods. And we'll have a woodshop group bring in some chessboards that they've made. And so the community will get a chance to see all the different 4-H projects that we've had throughout the year.
Well, that sounds pretty familiar to me, you know, canned goods and produce. And I remember my older sister was a 4-H'er, and we lived on bread for probably a month because she made every piece of kind of bread imaginable because she was getting ready for 4-H competition. That was pretty fun. But I always think of animals when I think of 4-H. I grew up in the Midwest. People showed their pigs and their cows and their chickens and their ducks. Does that any plans for anything like that here in town?
Well, Bobby Daniels was herself a former 4-H member. Huh? And once she kind of settles down with getting her farm off the business, has expressed interest in being a 4-H leader in the future.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I can't wait for that. This is going to be a great summer with these programs coming up. Hey, Andrew, I'm going to ask you a little bit about the future of 4-H in the state, well, in your program and then in the state. If you could talk a little bit about challenges you have or plans that you have for the future.
Yeah, well, as everybody knows, the state's dealing with a severe budget crisis, and we had the position of the cooperative extension agent in Sitka cut, and then Jasmine's positions is even threatened into the next year. And so one thing we're working on with cooperative extension out of Fairbanks is keeping her position here in Sitka and figuring out what we can do at the Conservation Society to help with that, if we can help share office space or if we can help with what some of the things they might need are. You know, the cooperative extension program's really important across the state because it gets out a lot of the information about growing foods, canning, safety on the water, master gardeners courses, and how to preserve food safely. And it's a really important position in Sitka. And for the 4-H program, you know, we can do a lot of local things, but the advantage of being part of 4-H is that it offers us the opportunity to tie into the national 4-H program and gives youth the opportunity to do everything from go to summer camps in Juneau to participate in leadership forums to participate in some of the programs that they have in Washington, D.C. on civic engagement. So long term, we're looking at how we get youth in Sitka involved in those programs and open up some of those doors. And, you know, it's really important that we have that support from the cooperative extension so that we can get tied into all of that, as well as, you know, as Jasmine said, coordinating adult volunteers, taking care of registrations, helping us out with insurance and liability and everything that we need to do on the administrative side so that we can give these opportunities to the community.
Oh, it's a very comprehensive program. You're going to have to remind me. Help me remember what the 4-H's stand for, one of you.
It's head, heart, hands, and health.
Head, heart, hands, and health. Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks. Thanks, Molly. So, Molly, I'm going to just ask you a little bit. You're new here, relatively new.
Relatively, right? Yeah.
And you are from?
I'm from Connecticut.
Uh-huh. And you're here as a Jesuit volunteer?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And how's your year been
so far? I love it. I absolutely love it here.
There's so many things I could ask you about, but we are out of time. So we've been speaking with three folks, Andrew Tomes and Molly Johnson with Sitka Conservation Society, Jasmine Shaw with the Cooperative Extension Service about 4-H programming. If you would like more information about the myriad of programs that we've talked about today, you can call the Conservation Society office at 747-7509. So I'd like to thank all of you for coming in today and have a great rest of the day and look forward to hearing about. Actually, I want to go see the judging. Are there ribbons? there going to be ribbons at the
fair?
There
will be ribbons.
Yeah, I probably have some tucked away somewhere in a shoebox. So good. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Raven Radio receives financial support from C-Mart Quality Foods, stocking grills, charcoal, propane, and food for the barbecue. Also carrying coolers, ice, and picnic items. C-Mart Quality Foods, located on Halibut Point Road and open 24 hours per day, every day.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 27th of June, 2016. It's the birthday of the poet Frank O'Hara, born Baltimore in 1926, or rather, it's the day on which he celebrated his birthday, though he was actually born in March, but his parents lied to him, said he was born 3 months later so he would not find out he was conceived out of wedlock. It's the birthday of Alice McDermott, born in Brooklyn, 1953, author of Charming Billy and the novel Someone, both set in Brooklyn. Alice McDermott, who said, "We're all novices when we start a new work." It's the birthday of the poet Paul Laurence Dunbar, born Dayton, Ohio, 1872, one of the first African-American writers to gain popular recognition in this country. He was the only black student at his high school in Dayton, but he was elected president of the class, editor of the high school newspaper. After graduating, supported himself as an elevator operator, published his first poetry collection in 1892, sold it himself to the passengers on his elevator. It's the birthday of the poet Lucille Clifton, born in Depew, New York, 1936, near Buffalo. When she was 22, she married a philosophy professor, Fred Clifton. They had six young children. She came out with her first book when she was 33. It was called Good Times, and the New York Times named it one of the 10 best books of that year. It's the birthday of Helen Keller, born in Tuscumbia, Alabama, 1880. When she was about a year and a half old, she came down with an illness, possibly scarlet fever, that left her blind and deaf. Nonetheless, she and her teacher and companion, Anne Sullivan, went off to Radcliffe College, 1899. She published 14 books, also went on vaudeville tours, which she enjoyed. Helen Keller has been portrayed mainly as an inspirational figure struggling and overcoming the adversity of handicaps. But she was a political person. She was a member of the Socialist Party. She was opposed to World War I. She was one of the first members of the American Civil Liberties Union. Here's a poem for today by Clint Margrave, to the student who asked why he earned a C on an essay about love. Because love has its own grammar, its own sentences, some that run on too long, others just fragments. It uses a language not always appropriate or too informal and often lacks clarity. Love is punctuated all wrong, changes tenses abruptly, relies heavily on the first person, can be redundant, awkward, full of unnecessary repetition. Every word is compounded, every phrase transitional. Love doesn't always know the difference between lie and lay. Its introductions sometimes lack a well-developed thesis. Its claims go unfounded. Its ad hominem attacks call in question its authority. With a style that's inconsistent, a voice either too critical or too passive, love is a rough draft in constant need of revision, whose conclusion rarely gives any sense of closure or reveals the lingering possibilities of a topic that always expects high praise and more often than not fails to be anything but average. A poem to the student who asked why he earned a C on an essay about love. by Clint Margrave from his collection Salute the Wreckage, published by NYQ Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this program comes from Harry Race Photo, offering a wide variety of services, including passport photos, VHS to DVD transferring, photo restoration, and video editing. Located at 106 Lincoln Street or online at whitesalaska.com. Harry Race, living local.
This is Bird Note. Of all the bold colors nature has bestowed upon birds, somehow bright pink seems the most outrageous, the most surprising. And just about the hottest pink bird of all lives year-round along the Gulf of Mexico, the roseate spoonbill. The roseate spoonbill is built like a large heron. It's a tall, slender wading bird with a long neck. Adults have deep pink bodies, blazes of carmine red on the wings and necks, and a tail the color of orange sherbet. So, the roseate spoonbill is gorgeous, at least from the neck down. Its head is bizarre, though. Unfeathered bare skin, shading from yellowish to gray, with a very long bill that looks like it belongs to a different bird entirely, ending in a wide, flattened spoon shape, all set off by a ruby-red eye. It feeds by wading through the shallows, head moving from side to side, bill in the water until sense organs inside it detect a small fish or crab when the spoon snaps shut. This specialized way of feeding, known as tactolocation, is shared by all six of the world's spoonbill species. Oddly, all the other species are feathered only in white and found in the Old World, which leaves just one on this side of the globe, but it's the hot pink one. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Morning. It's 33 minutes after 8 a.m. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's currently 56 degrees under overcast skies. In the forecast for Sitka today, mostly cloudy skies, isolated showers, highs around 61 degrees with light winds becoming south 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. For tonight in Sitka, mostly cloudy, isolated showers late with lows around 51. And for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers, highs around 61. Light winds becoming northwest 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. And looking across our listening region, zone weather is pretty much the same all the way throughout all our listening communities. Mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s. In case you missed the news report this morning, we heard about efforts underway to eradicate DVEX, a marine organism plaguing Sitka waters. The Alaska Department of Transportation wants to hire a company to survey a proposed road on Kuprinoff Island and a report on the Juneau gay community's reaction to the shooting at a nightclub in Orlando earlier this month. The sun rose at 4:09 this morning. It will set at 10 p.m. That's a total of 17 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, a loss of 54 seconds over yesterday. We'll have a low tide of 0.6 feet. coming up at 12:36 this afternoon. A high of 9.2 feet, that's at 7:18 this evening, and a low of 1.9 feet at 1:45 tomorrow morning. On the community calendar for today, the 4-H Gardening Club for youth in kindergarten through second grade meets 2 to 4:30 p.m. every other Monday from June 13th through August 22nd. You can call 747-7509 for more information in case you missed our interview this morning as well. We heard all about the many, many, many programs offered through 4-H and the Sitka Conservation Society. So we should have that posted on our website, kcaw.org, later on, and you'll be able to learn about all the summer programs and things that happen throughout the year with 4-H. Childbirth education classes are Mondays through July 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. in the Sitka Community Hospital lower level classroom. Hames Center offers open soccer 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Mondays for all school skill levels. And the Greater Sitka Arts Council and Sitka Folk host acoustic jam sessions. It's every Monday at the Loft from 7 to 9 p.m. Hames Center offers indoor hockey. That's from 8 to 9 p.m. on Mondays. You can call the Hames Center at 747-5080 for more information on that. And celebrate Independence Day with Raven Radio. Join us at the Cable House immediately after the parade for free root beer floats, lawn games, and live music. Thanks to Harry Race Soda Shop, Baranoff Island Brewing Company, and Sitka Sound Seafoods. No ships in port in Sitka today. Tomorrow you can expect the Silver Shadow lightering to the O'Connell Bridge and the Crystal Serenity at Old Sitka Dock. Together they carry a total of 1,462 passengers. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. It's 20 minutes before 9 a.m. Hope you're having a great morning. Thanks so much for joining me. Coming up next, music, rather news, and National Public Radio.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Here's a question. What happens when a banker to the world starts cutting itself off from the world?
London is a great financial center, and it is, of course, in Great Britain, whose people just voted to leave the European Union.
NPR's Jim Zaroli reports on what happens to the banks now.
London has been a global money center for centuries, but in recent decades, with deregulation and the explosion of global trade, its importance has only grown, especially in derivatives and asset management. It now rivals New York City as a financial power. Nicolas Veron is a senior fellow at the Belgian think tank Bruegel.
There has been a rise in financial globalization, more financial business being done across borders, and London has positioned itself as the best place to capture this business.
London doesn't just have big banks and trading firms. It has a huge army of accountants and lawyers and consultants.